that is that you can handle any kind of a sample, whether it's gas, solid, liquid, or a film, or whatever. There's always a sampling procedure that will let you look at that sample. The other thing is it's non-destructive. It does not, it's not like chromatograph or mass spec. It doesn't do anything to the sample, so it works beautifully on a production line. It doesn't upset the sample you're trying to analyze, that sort of thing. That's one of the big advantages of infrared. And all my career, I think I've been trying to figure out ways of making cells that would hold the kind of sample that people want to analyze, you know, and that's what led to all these different accessories and gas cells and cylindrical cells and things like that.
How big did GAC get between, you know, during the course of the 1980s?
It got up to about 8 million in sales, and then it began to go downhill.
And about how many employees?
It had about 60 at its peak, you know, as opposed to 120 that we had at Books Scientific,
and,
and 10 we have at Books Enterprise. So.
And you retired what year? What's the technical official first retirement?
1973, I guess, when I decided that I should turn the company over to somebody else. And,
1993? 93. Yeah, okay. Okay. And when you retired in 93, you stayed on the board of directors?
I stayed on the board, and I also began to play around with filter instruments and eventually evolved Wilkes Enterprise out of what we were doing.
But sticking with GAC, what kind of board did it have? How was that constituted? Who was on it?
Well, I had two people who were former IBM people who invested in the company, and they brought a group from Maersk in Denmark who also invested in GAC. And they were really very excellent outside supporters. I have a high regard for Maersk and their people. And it was just unfortunate that through some management mistakes that I made personally, putting the wrong people in there, that the company went downhill and we had to ultimately end up selling it. So.
Now the retirement was, were there some time of pure retirement before?
About 2 weeks. About that time I decided I didn't want to hang around the house. And, I was still involved to a certain extent with GAC, and so I took some space. I owned the building and I took some space out and back, and that's where I started with Enterprise. So.
Well, I wanted to ask about with the not so much now the competition between IR manufacturers, but the competition between IR and other types of instruments for for you know the attention of the organic chemist or whatever. So you know in the 60s, 70s, 80s, the competition, your view of the competition of other types of instruments on IR?
Well, for quite a while there wasn't really a lot of competition. Infrared was really the only viable procedure for identifying molecules. You know, in that period, there all of these new molecules are being created, like penicillin, for example. And what was the chemical structure of these materials? In infrared, by this stage, the absorption bands have been classified so that they could be credited to particular types of chemical bonds. So you could take an unknown material that was created by a chemist and determine its structure. And that was a big activity in the 70s, I would think, as far as infrared is concerned. Then mass spectroscopy came along, and chromatography, which broke mixtures up into components, and NMR, which is a tremendous advance. And these other technologies have begun to not so much supplant infrared, but to join them as quantitative type instrumentation. In recent years, the use of infrared in laboratories has not grown very rapidly. Mm-hmm. It grows maybe 3% a year, although recently I've seen an increase in the use of infrared percentage-wise, if you look at the market statistics. And I don't quite know the reason for this, but other techniques have come along which are very useful. The big expansion in infrared today is moving toward process analysis. And for the reasons that I've given you, it is a material. It has the features of being able to quantify a mixture. In other words, you can look at a mixture and get absorption bands for each component and quantify them. And secondly, it's non-destructive, so that you can stick it into a process stream and without upsetting the stream and that sort of thing. And to me, that's the big movement in instrumentation today is toward process analysis and process control, and a lot of methods are being used, you know, pH and conductivity and that sort of thing. Infrared has not really gotten into direct stream analysis as yet, but it's coming very rapidly, and it's going to be very widely used in the next few years because of the reasons that I've said. Mm. And it's due to increase better materials, better detectors, you know, microelectronics, all these things that have happened that make it more feasible to apply it. Mass spectroscopy is a destructive technique. You can't get a mass spectrum without destroying the sample automatically. You destroy the same with chromatography. You destroy the sample. UV is a non-destructive. NMR is important borderline. Raman is something that is really coming in now. For years, it was a technology that nobody really had been able to make wide use of. But with lasers, it give very intense sources. The Raman spectra are much easier to come by today. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest inline technologies in the future. It has tremendous possibilities. It's really an infrared technique, but it's a different way of getting an infrared spectrum, you know. So, but it creates the same kind of a spectrum that you can identify chemical structure and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Yes, I wanted to ask if you could talk about the importance of the evolution of electronics and computing to the development of IR. You know, how important has that, the development of electronics, been to the development of IR technology and then also the development of data handling or digital computing?
Sure. Well, it's obviously tremendously important, and it's more important with FTIR type instruments today than it really was with the dispersive instruments, because computer technology is absolutely essential to make an FTIR work, and once you have a computer, then you can do a lot of other things with it. The thing that's made infrared grow, from my standpoint, are things like the space program. Out of the space program came new detectors, which were immediately usable in the infrared, commercial type infrared and materials. They developed zinc selenide and zinc sulfide crystals, and these were developed as part of the space program or the military programs, and immediately we could apply these materials to infrared sample handling and that sort of thing. And as I've said today, the the microelectronics that are appearing are absolutely phenomenal in what they can do in little tiny chips, and that gives you an opportunity to make very small, very useful gadgets that make infrared measurements. And it also, the cost is coming down tremendously. I mean, we can sell these things for $2,000 or $3,000 today, and then tomorrow they're going to be $200 or $300, you know, and do the same kind of thing. So, in my experience, has always been that the market grows exponentially as the price comes down. So, as you can drop the price, the market gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So.
Well, that was all the specific questions that I had, but is there a question that we should have asked that we haven't, or do you have anything, any other comments?
Well, I think I've pretty well covered. I guess the only thing I can say is that the opportunities in the field of infrared spectroscopy are just as big today as they ever were. There's a very interesting development that has occurred in the last 5 or 6 years, which I haven't really touched on, and that is the emergence of near-infrared as a technology. It's quite distinct from mid-infrared, and the reason for that is that the absorption bands that you work with are overtone bands. They're not fundamental bands. They are. Every absorption band has overtones at certain frequencies. And in the near infrared, the overtones from the fundamental bands tend to overlap, so you don't get nice, clean, sharp absorption bands. On the other hand, the energy level in the near infrared is like a factor of 10 or so higher. Using tungsten lamps and things like that, you have much higher infrared sources. And water is much more transparent in the near-infrared, so that you can look through water and see things in water that you can't do in the mid-infrared. So there are also materials that are useful, like quartz and glass, which transmit near-infrared and don't transmit. So there's been a tremendous development of the near-infrared field in the last few years. It's almost like a cult. I mean, there's a group that does near-infrared and the group does mid-infrared, and they don't talk to each other. And they really should, because I was invited by a group to join a committee that was trying to develop near-infrared as a qualitative tool. And I said, this is ridiculous. You can't use near-infrared spectra and identify unknown materials and that sort of thing. Stick to the mid-infrared. On the other hand, for a lot of process applications, near-infrared is superior to mid-infrared because you've got better transmission, better materials, and that sort of thing. You got to stick to what is good. So, and it tickles me because the conference is held every year in New Jersey.
The Eastern
Analytical. They keep asking me, why aren't you going to exhibit, Paul? And I said, well, you guys have a paper on mid-infrared. I'll exhibit, but every single thing they do is near-infrared, and they don't have any interest in mid-infrared. So that's what I mean by it's sort of a cultish situation. But if you sit back and look at it, there are very good reasons for using both parts of the spectrum. You have to look at the job you're trying to do with it, and you pick the region where you get the best combination of characteristics. So. I don't know if there's anything else that I have left out.
Well, reflecting back on, I mean, you've had a career that spanned 5 companies, but a very targeted and focused one.
That's right. Yes, and I think probably almost I've been too focused just in this one particular technical region, but I always keep saying to myself, there's so much more to be done here. You know, why should I get involved in mass spec or Raman or whatever when there's so many things that I know how to do in the mid-infrared, and therefore I should spend my time there and not try to go somewhere else. You know, there are a lot of good people that are doing things in other fields. So that's why I think I stayed focused. And
Well, great.
All right.
Well, I'll switch it off.